listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Guys, it's the Forza Up Podcast. It is your guy, Jordan. Marsh couldn't be here today. He's out of town. But I have one of the favorites of the podcast, one of my personal favorite people that I've met this year, is our guy, Better Duck. Better Duck is co-hosting with me today. Duck, how are you, man?
What's up? Fours up.
Dude, we're happy to have you back on. I mean, it feels like you're pretty much on here, you know, at least once a month, if not more. But, you know, we just can't get enough of you, man. So,
well, thanks. And it's good to be on.
Yeah. So, you know, I always love hearing your takes because I mean, if there was like a spectrum of fanhood from the people who are like overly supportive, like always giving the team the benefit of the doubt.
Cheerleaders.
Yeah, the cheerleaders. And then you have the cynics on the other side. You know, at least your persona on Twitter tends to be highly cynical. And I think I'm on the cynical side of moderate. You know, I wouldn't say I'm completely cynical. You know, I definitely always predict a 10-2 season, you know, every year.
Right.
But during the year, you know, I cool off when I see stuff I don't like I'm honest about it.
Right.
You know, I've kind of caught some flack this year so far, but I like having you on just because I'm, you know, then there's someone else for people to get mad at. All right. Well, speaking of which, Doug, have you been looking for a good place to watch the Kane games recently?
Always.
Well, always. I have a great place in mind, man. And to everyone listening, like if you guys are looking for the place to cheer on the Canes this season and enjoy exceptional craft beer, look no further than the Tank Brewing. At the Tank, they're passionate about brewing the highest quality craft beer in a process they call liquid innovation. Their big screens in their 6,500 square foot tasting room were made to watch your team and can be viewed just as well from their outdoor patio. With 16 taps, they guarantee you'll find the craft beer you've been craving. Are you hungry? Enjoy a mouth-watering menu from Twisted Fork Kitchen that will bring you back for more. And speaking of which, I looked up the Tank on Yelp, and they have 4.5 stars out of 218 reviews. And someone mentioned a guava manchego burger, which made my mouth water. So definitely check out the food there. The Tank is the only brewery around with a cigar shop inside, and you'll love the selection. Staying in for the game, no problem. Order online at thetankbrewingtakeout.com or call us at 786-801-1554 for delivery or curbside pickup. Use promo code TANK4SUP, that's the number 4. Tank4SUP, and you'll get free delivery on game days. Follow the Tank on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at the Tank Brewing for the latest news about their exceptional brews. The Tank is proudly located in the heart of Miami at 5100 Northwest and 72nd Avenue. Whether it's game day or any other day, they're always brewing up something delicious at the Tank. Now, how does that sound to you, Duck?
It sounds pretty good. I'm Broward County, so I haven't been there, but I'm just looking it up now online.
Yeah.
And the coupon offer with the, what is it, Fours Up, that's a hell of a deal because free delivery.
Yeah.
Jump on that.
I'm going to see if they deliver to Salt Lake, man, because, I mean, if anything with Manchego cheese has me, you know, like.
Yes.
I'm a sucker for some good Spanish cheeses, so.
Nice.
Yep. But anyways, we got a cool show. I want to give a quick shout out to our guy, Adrian Bastolfi. He does stickers by AB. He's helping out with our merch line. We got some T-shirts that are going to drop any day now. You know, we've been anticipating this for a while, but he's given us some killer designs. So definitely check out his stickers. They're all Hurricanes related. Very high quality. I've been using them. You know, I put some on my cooler for when I take it up into the mountains. You know, I got some on my laptop and all my binders and stuff. It's really cool Kane's gear. So, but Duck, we got Roman Kane coming on in just a second.
Wow. That's a good get.
I know, man. And, I don't know how you feel about our offense, but it's pretty amazing so far. So, I'm very interested to hear what Roman has to say. I mean, he's like the king of X's and O's.
He is. So. He's doing probably the best work content out there right now. I don't even see guys from other schools even attempting that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, man, we're incredibly lucky to have him. And have you been liking our rushing attack? I know you're a big running backs guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the rushing attack. I love Cam's build. Like, I like traditional running backs that look like running backs. And you saw it a little bit last year when he got in to spell who was the back last year?
DJ Dallas.
DJ Dallas, who was a great back, but he was not a traditional running back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was a little tall and a little skinny in the legs, and he was really quick and had breakaway speed. But I like to pound.
Yeah.
I like to pound, and the Cam's run was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was fantastic, and I immediately waited for Roe to, you know, diagram it. And, you know, he put out the video that he does showing you the breakdown.
Yep.
And I was like, perfect. Because, you know, people are quick to dismiss a long run like, oh, it's a fluke or a broken play. Well, not always. Sometimes it is, but not always. And I'm not knowledgeable enough to be able to look at the play and be able to tell it. So I'm glad you got Roman as a guest today. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that 75 yard touchdown run that Cam Harris had. I saw today that you know, with all the fancy computer software that people have out there, they tracked him at being the fastest player on the field. Was it in all of college football this week? I think it might have been. But he hit 22 miles per hour on that sprint. And think about it. Like, he's a big dude. Like you said, he's more of a power back in today's game. You know, more of a traditional old school runner, like you were saying. And, you know, like, their defensive back had angles on him, you know, and he just outrun him. He outran him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, absolutely incredible play from Cam. I love the dude. Like, yeah. So anyways, I'm going to patch Roman in if you're ready for him.
Ready.
Ro, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
What up?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. I got Perfect. Doug here with me.
Hi, Doug.
What's up, Roman?
How's it going, bud?
All good. All good.
So I know we're both pumped to have you on, man. Like, the offense is exciting. We scored, 47 points in only like 21 minutes of possession. We had some huge dynamite plays to start off the second half. Geez, I mean, all of our weapons look a whole lot more weapony when you have a good quarterback and a good offensive coordinator, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something I've been clamoring for, even though Ducky was like, oh no, we need to run the ball. We need to run. Yeah. In the first week you did, UAB just, you kind of had this game plan. They came in out into a different front. And then since 2004, when the Miami Hurricanes went and joined the ACC, that was the second highest total rush yards against a FBS school. So, and I heard all this slander about UAB, and I know we're talking about the Louisville game, but UAB was the 20th ranked defense last year. I mean, apples to apples, a lot of teams come in with these spread offenses. They can spread you out. They can be effective, gas you up. They were one spot behind Clemson, two spots behind us. So you got to give them a little credit, and we took them to school. Now you turn around and you watch Louisville, right? The Miami offense has the balance now and the capability because inexplicably, you know, Louisville just really wanted to take that running ability away from us. And they played without a safety 21 times. Okay. You want to dare an offense and slap an offense with like silliness to the face and just basically say, you can't beat us. Go ahead and play without a safety 21 times. And guess what happened? Those kind of stats happen. Those kind of plays out of the second half where you just throw none of those two first down out of the second half, the touchdown run, the 75-yard touchdown run to Cam Harris, and then the Rooster breaking free. None of those plays had safeties. So pick your poison. Pick your poison. The first week, UAB was content in keeping the big plays at bay, you know, letting the running backs have their way. They ran all over you. Louisville comes out and says, we're not going to necessarily let you run all over us. We'll let you pass, and Miami can beat you in a myriad of ways, and they put up 47 points. And even then, that was the second highest total. That was the second highest total for a University of Miami team versus a ranked opponent since they did it to Cincinnati with double nickels. So, I mean, and they're not happy. That's the greatest thing. They're not happy about it. They're coming out saying we left a lot of points on the board. This isn't good enough. This isn't Miami football. So you got to be happy at the direction Rhett Lashley's taking the offense.
For sure. Now, when you say they played without a safety, that means they added a linebacker?
All right. So, Ducky, what I mean is what is referred to as cover zero. So you have a safety on the field. So against Cam, he dropped down into the box. Better said, it's like your safety is not patrolling the middle of the field. You either typically you have a single high safety or two high safeties. Louisville's like, we don't need any of them. So they basically played man-to-man coverage on one side, and in the middle of the field, no safeties. They got burnt with what's known in a cover zero look, no safeties.
I gotcha.
I mean, I can understand why they would think that from a game plan. I mean, we've yet to really connect on the deep ball very well. And, I mean, I'd love to get your take on it. I think our wide receiver group is a little bit suspect. Like, if you're going to point to any position group on offense, it's probably them. But, I mean, I just love that we were able to exploit it. I love that. I mean, you'd probably be able to explain this better than me, but like, were those plays like the Cam run and then the Jalen Knighton, thing where it looked like it was a read option type thing, and then it just ended up being a little, dump pass over the linebackers. Were those plays like set up? Did you notice that?
I'll talk about the plays, and then I'll talk about the wide receiver position, because you asked me two very good questions. And in terms of the play, those were both instances, no safety. We established that. The Cam, they used orbit motion to get Mike Harley from one side of the field, and they left it vacant. Now, inexplicably, too, they had their defensive end kind of like wash in. They try to do this run stunt, and Jared Williams did a remarkable job of taking his defender and like basically sealing the edge. And when you don't have any safety because you drop them into the box and all your other secondary defenders are on the other side of the field, Cam Harris reached epic proportions, reaching 22 miles per hour on that run. I think that's crazy. A lot of money on that run alone, because I always said that, Cameron Harris was probably the slowest running back of the three. Well, he made me eat a little crow. So you get that run that way. And then the second, and because I think Rhett Lashley was picking up on the fact that, Louisville just didn't care about putting safeties over the top. So right back to the boundary, right back when there was no safety, he had this fake quarterback power run, the threat of Derek King running the ball, sucked in his defenders. And you also had an offensive lineman use some eye candy to pull around, because you don't really pull offensive linemen a lot. I mean, you're starting to see it a little bit more, but when you pull an offensive lineman, especially a guard, in the high school level, they tell you, where the play goes is where the guard goes. Follow the guard, follow the play. Well, that was what we call a key buster, and Louisville just took it. that was a brilliantly scripted play by Rhett Lashley. He went into his bag, and then there you go. In terms of the wide receivers, I'm just going to settle in after two games. I'll let you know something. The best wide receiver we have on the team is Brevin Jordan. Can we just leave it there? I mean, because that's – he's out in that variety. He's a pass catcher. They put him on the perimeter, and he's the guy that is going to go ahead and keep opposing defenses up at night. And I agree with you. You walk out of that game, you have six drops. Pope might have had a guy in front of him and deflected it. Who knows? It looked really, really bad on film. Mike Harley drops a touchdown, so you left 4 points right there. You could have went over 50 points against Louisville two years in a row, but he drops a ball he should never drop. And that was my question coming into the season. Are we going to have that dominant X wide receiver that's going to go ahead and separate? And, when teams try to take away maybe Brevin, but you move Brevin around, it's hard to take him away because you don't know where he's going to line up from one play to the next. So in this case, I agree with the sentiment. We don't have that dumb. Like SMU last year had Prochet, and that guy was a monster. You know, when you needed a play, Prochet was the guy. And in terms of the wide receivers on this team, I don't see a Prochet emerging as of yet. there's hyperbole, there's coach speak, there's hypothetical. But in 2 weeks, I just don't see the wide receivers playing the dividends that, rightfully so. I had some questions, but you know what? Brevin Jordan me all day, and I feel much better.
Right. Well, another thing that's really impressive is that the Derek King is doing all this in this weird season where they've had barely any practices or any time together with a new coordinator, and both of them coming from different programs. Like, usually those two would be struggling the most. And like, I haven't seen a guy in Derek King here in a long, long time. Like, he reminds me of Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. where you can just see he's smart. Like, it just amplifies how much knuckleheads the last couple of quarterbacks were here.
Yeah. You know what's funny, Ducky? Because you're sitting there and you're talking about this, and I'm literally doing a comparison in the background, you know, against James Blackman, right? That's our up.
Yeah.
And then after watching this and doing this, I even get more of an appreciation in a sense for Derek King as the quarterback, because he just does little things very innately and very efficiently, things that you don't really notice. Like putting the ball, like go back and Will Mallory, he's like, oh, he threw a bad ball. That ball to Will Mallory on that shoulder is what led to a touchdown. And meanwhile, yeah. you turn around and you watch a clip from James Blackman. He throws the ball on the inside shoulder. Later on, it ends up leading to a touchdown, but he puts it on the wrong shoulder. Derek King, there was a couple third and 14s, guys, where he stays in the pocket, his offensive line, and let's give them credit because, you know, only 3 sacks in 2 games. I mean, they gave up 11 the first week last year. You know, it was insane. Yeah. So you're way on pace. That was my group from day one. When you asked me who is the group who's going to benefit the most, I said it was the offensive line. Thankfully, in 2 games, they're proving me right. But like, Derek King can sense that. He knows, like, hey, my offensive line is fine. He knows when to run. He knows when to stay. And you know what? When you have these running quarterbacks, sometimes maybe they leave the pocket a little bit too soon. But you had a 3rd and 14 to Mark Pope that I watched that he sensed it. He had another one to Brevin Jordan when he just scanned like 4 wide receivers before he find it. He didn't leave too early. He understands the presence. He knows where to put the balls. He's not just a running quarterback. And you know how you can prove that to people? He had 50 touchdowns, right? Yeah. Anytime you break anything record-wise from college and Tim Tebow, you're doing something right. And when you turn around and only like 3 people in collegiate history had ended up with 50 touchdowns at their position, Derek King being one of them, you got to give him praise. I'm starting to see why. And I agree, Ducky. He's just another level. He's just another level that Miami hasn't seen before here.
Yeah. One thing I love about him is, you know, I wouldn't profess to know quarterbacks well enough to, you know, to say that there's a guy that he really sells me on with his arm, but as a ball carrier, like, he looks the same as what Kyler Murray is doing in a Arizona Cardinals helmet right now. Just like when he tucks it and run, he's so dynamic. I mean, he's small and shifty and I don't know. There was a play that Kyler Murray had against the 49ers in week 1 where like there was a defender that had the angle on and running full speed, and he cuts away from the defender and like kicks it into another gear and somehow outruns him, even though he changed direction. And like, that's the kind of stuff that I'm seeing from Derek King. And I just love it, man. Like, he's so athletic. Even if he can't make it in the NFL as a quarterback, like, there has to be a spot for him because he's just special. And, you know, with that being said, I love what I'm seeing with his arm so far. I think he's, you know, a very, very good college quarterback, too. I don't know. I'm just, like, drooling over here when I watch him play. He's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the intangibles there too. I mean, when you see them like bring over the touchdown rings, right? Now, I like I've always liked the turnover chain, right? And and since the turnover chain's inception, and it could be a little, some people might constitute it gimmicky. I get it. But since the turnover chain's inception, Miami has led like P5 teams in turnovers. I mean, it has some magic powers. Now, in full admission, the touchdown rings, I don't like that. You know,
agreed.
And I like, you know what? I like what Derek King, I mean, he immediately is trying to pass the buck off. He's trying to like, I don't want him, give him to the offensive. I don't want him. It's almost like the rings have become hot potato, right?
Yeah.
Where their turnover chain is sought after, you know, his leadership quality, he's not going to celebrate. The job's not done. We're still playing. And you know what? Take these rings somewhere else. So I love that about Derek King's ability. From the second he's got here, he like earned the ability to become a captain. He gained the attention and the respect of everybody in that locker room. There is no, you know, locker room quarterback division right going on right now because he leads it, right? He is doing a great job, and that is what you need at the quarterback position above all else. It doesn't matter. You can see all the talent on the field, but if you can't be a leader off of it, it's not going to work. So I'm really, you're right. And I like the comparisons. I love Ducky's comparison of Russell Wilson. He has that playmaking ability. I love the shiftiness as once he turns into runner of Kyler Murray. I think that's accurate. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, some of the deep balls we haven't got it. But if you go back, like that ball that he threw, there was two deep balls that ended up being like, you know, one was a pass interference to Pope. And I think that was when you march it out, I think that would have been six. That would have been a deep ball. But, you know, he got pass interference on it. Great job. That's what you want. And then the one when we get Don Chaney one-on-one, you know, Don blew by his guy. I don't know, freshman mistake. He didn't look up for the ball, but that could have been a big play too. So still not getting the deep shots, but you know, it's the great thing. You have an offense that, you know, in the past you needed a deep shot, deep play touchdown just to sniff like 28 points to 30 points. It's nice to miss on shots like that because you missed on two of them and you walk away with 47 points. Yeah. I'll take that all day.
Yeah, and watching De'Aaron King's 2018 highlight reel, you know, I've watched just highlight reel after highlight reel of him. And, you know, the deep ball was actually what I was most confident in coming into the year because he was hitting them time and time again in Houston. I was actually more worried about the short and intermediate routes, and he looks very accurate in those. So I'm actually not worried about the deep ball right now. I feel like it'll come. I feel like that's the type of timing, chemistry type thing that you develop over time. So I'm not worried about that. And the fact that he looks good in the short and intermediate just makes me, I have no complaints with De'Aaron King. I'm just 100% excited with the way our offense is looking and really the prospects for the whole season right now.
I agree. You said it. I mean, earlier on before this season started and after Enos was jettisoned to be a running back coach, you go from basically quarterback guru to running back coach for Cincinnati. Talk about a fall. You know, they
were
like,
what do you think happened there?
You know what, Ducky, great question. It's, you know, round hole, square peg or whatever that adage is. I'm part dyslexic sometimes. It was just a bad system. I get it because he sold Miami bag of goods. He sold me. I'd be the first one to admit it. I mean, you see Alabama coming off record numbers. He's the next successor. On paper, he looked to be the guy. Now, the only thing that I will give me a little bit of a pass on, I went back and I read my prior article and when he first was named the hire, and I wrote, and at the time I was writing for Insight, and I had a line in there. I was like, this isn't a spread up-tempo offense that I would have chose. Can it work here in Miami? Absolutely. That's where I was dead wrong, right? I was right in thinking that, hey, I don't think this is the and I'm going to tie in something that happened before with what you said, Duck, because, you know, you're like, the fact that they have it in this COVID series or season in this environment, they don't have the time to necessarily put it all on paper, what have you. But this style of offense is actually tailor-made for Miami because it's like less thinking, less moving parts, just line up and go.
I
think that's what you're seeing, right? Less moving parts, line up and go. You don't have as many motions as you had the year before. You don't have as many exotic formations that you had the year. You're not asking your quarterback to hold the ball for 7 seconds, which I think was the biggest critical design flaw of an Enos offense, thinking he still had an Alabama offensive line. Right. No, you had a good, talented offensive line in the avenue that you didn't put him in disadvantageous spots. Yeah. And that's exactly what he did. So just a bad, bad, bad system fit. You know, take that offense, go in the Midwest somewhere. It might do good. Yeah. Like go to Iowa with it or something where you have beasts, you know, Wisconsin. But down here, just a bad fit. And you got to think, too, guys, you know, most Miami kids, South Florida offenses, it was the same thing coming off D'Onofrio. I was like, most of these kids play a one gap 4-3 system. Right. It's just like give him an avenue, tell him go get the quarterback. If the running back happens to be there, tackle his ass too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But and now the offense, so it's like it's native tongue. You know, it's familiar DNA. It's like, oh, you put me in space in an up-tempo offense, no problem. You know, you want me to run all day in South Florida Heat, no problems. You know, so I think, you know, that's what happened to Enos there, and it just goes to show you because it's like Miami. Ooh, they just missed their opportunities. If they would have been running this style of offense 10 years ago, you know, this could have been something Miami was used to. Miami could have been the epicenter of offensive football. It really could have, but it missed its window.
Where do you think that stems from? Do you think the administration is like nowhere to drop back to school?
Pride. You know what? Pride. When Miami was winning its national championships in 2001, there was an arms race developing, right? The SEC started to get the CBS money, started rolling in. These big outlandish weight rooms started to manifest. These, you know, these epic proportioned, like, you know, facilities, you know, upgrades to their stadiums, yeah. You know, an effort to go ahead and dump millions into recruiting. And Miami just rested on its laurel first with its facilities and said, nah, kids will want to come to Miami because it's Miami. And it got away with this rinky podunk little weight room. But because it had, you know, these kids started to change, too. They weren't about the tradition. They were about the flash. It became an instant gratification kind of society. And Miami was resting on this stature that it had that it was starting to lose. Now, take that to the offensive side of the ball, because it was, believe it or not, and one of the worst offensive coordinators I've ever seen was Patrick Nix. Patrick Nix actually went to Randy Shannon and said, I want to run an up-tempo spread offense, to which Randy Shannon's pride, right? Randy Shannon's pride said, no, Miami is a pro team. At that moment, it was lost. To me, it was lost, because Miami wasn't a pro team. You got to go back and realize what Miami special. Miami under Howard Schnellenberger was a pro team when most of the country was an option team. Miami under Jimmy Johnson turned a 4-3 attack system and put light athletes to go ahead and make disruption behind the line of scrimmage, while most people wanted 300-pound linemen who two-gapped and were just taking up space. When it was Dennis Erickson who came in with a single back offense, which was revolutionary for the time. The minute Miami decided that it was going to be a pro team and rest on its laurels, it got his ass kicked routinely in the game, passed them by. So now they finally start to modernize the wardrobe. They start to think, hey, we have to be forward thinking. And now you see over these first two games, like epic proportion numbers. Remember, the second highest total rushing since 04.
Crazy.
The second most points since joining the ACC against a ranked opponent. And it just happened magically, right? It was always in front of their face. They just didn't and weren't willing to admit it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to bring up something, but you touched on it. The Enos thing was kind of the same thing as D'Onofrio. And that should be a lesson that we learn from as a program. That we don't need complexity, we don't need intricacy, we don't need an NFL-type system. Like, you know, we have very fast-twitch, instinctive, high-level athletes that come out of the South Florida high school system. So, like, why not maximize that? You know, why focus so much on this read and react or the, you know, that type of stuff that we're expecting these pro athletes to do? When like you said, it's native tongue for these kids to just get out and you know, run until they can anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So I really hope that the program has learned from that and that we will never make that mistake on either side of the ball ever again.
Agreed. Just Miami needs to, above all else, be the most innovative team, because that's how they won their national championships. It was on the back of innovation. It wasn't just, you know, Miami couldn't do it. Like, Miami wouldn't have won its 83 national championship running the option like so many other teams, right? Yep. It just wasn't going to happen, you know? And, you know, the irony, too, because I mentioned Randy Shannon. You know, Randy Shannon won a quote-unquote national championship with UCF. And what offense was the UCF running? Right. The UCF Knights were running the offense that Patrick Nix came in, told you that you probably should have run back then. So it just goes to show you, just that one bad decision and resting on your laurel set this program back decades.
Yeah. Well, I had a quick question, you know, X's and O's from a chart that I saw. It was a chart of, you know, which players played how many snaps on offense and defense. I can't remember the total snap count from our offense. I think it was in the high 60s or low 70s. Is that correct?
Of the last game we had?
Correct, against Louisville.
I believe the total was 60, and our average last year was 64, so we barely hit 60. The average for SMU last year was about 16 more plays a game, like 15 and change. So they averaged, we were 64 plays a game last year, and they were basically right, just add 15 to that, and then they were 79 plays. So they averaged 79, so we were underneath even last year's total. Yeah. But go ahead.
So I noticed that Brevin Jordan only missed 6 snaps on offense, and Will Mallory played in the mid-40s, meaning that those two, you know, most likely shared the snaps for at least 40, or they shared the field for at least 40 snaps that we ran on offense. And I would love if you could tell us a little bit about our two tight end sets. As we mentioned earlier, the wide receivers are kind of lackluster. I mean, I'll say it so you don't have to. I don't love our wide receiver group. I'm with you that our two most dangerous pass catchers are probably Will Mallory and Brevin Jordan. And so I'm very excited about the idea of two tight end sets and just having these guys on the field so that the pass game can continue to be a threat.
Yeah, so when you see out of 60 plays and Will Mallory is on the field for, you know, what we're saying, an average, it might not be the exact total, 40. So those guys are basically telling you, and Miami is telling you, that they're what is known as a 12-set team. 12-set personnel means one running back, two tight ends. And they just provide the mismatch nightmares. Now, Brevin Jordan ended up scoring, and this is what your tight ends in that set can do, and this is what they have been doing. You know, you look at Brevin Jordan's touchdown. It was a kind of a coverage bust. Once again, a play where they didn't use a safety. Brevin Jordan, they use a check with me variety, meaning they look over to Rhett Lashley. He sees what he can. He sees it materialize, and it's an easy chunk touchdown. Put the game away. He was lined up out as a slot receiver. And then you turn around and you look at Will Mallory's touchdown from a tight end. He's in your traditional inline capacity. He's directly in line. They run a nice play action pass off it. He sells a block. He gets in a space. He finds a seam. He gets away from his defender and he scores. And then you have some other plays too, where it's just now you have both tight ends in line. You know, you've been successful where both Brevin Jordan and, you know, Will Mallory are lined up as tight ends. Then you have Brevin Jordan. He'll come back in an H-back capacity sometimes. Sometimes you have Will Mallory come back in an H-back capacity. It's just one of those hard things for defenses, boys, because you got to decide, like, what you want to combat that with, okay? And this is the advantage Miami's going to have. Do you want to keep, like, what we do in our 4-2-5 with a lighter striker? And then you want to get your lighter striker maybe on Will Mallory, and maybe Will Mallory can block you a little bit better. Maybe he's got the height advantage inside the red zone. Or do you want to do your traditional like 4-3 defense and have your linebacker come in? So if you want to play small, Miami showed you week one, we could kind of come inside the box with our two tight ends because, you know, in that fourth, go back to the UAB game, that one of the key blocks on that was Will Mallory in line. He kicked out his defensive end. And, you know, Cam Harris took one of his exceptionally long runs, the first one against UAB, to the house, 65 yards, I believe that was, to the house. Will Mallory, and a great, great block. You also are getting some of these plays on the perimeter, some of these bubble screens that are going for first downs. Yep, there you go. Brevin Jordan blocking again because he's got the size advantage on some of these kids. So it's a very, very tough nightmare. And I don't think Miami's going to get away from it. I think that's where they know that they have a lot of advantage on the field. So I'm not – you got to remember, too, I mean, New England Patriots, yes, they won. They won with, you know, they almost had an undefeated season. They had that crazy play that happened. They were a spread-up tempo team. They were like Big 12 country, right? Mm-hmm. Then they turn around and they win a national championship when they had two tight ends in, you know, Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. So, you know, Miami's kind of like hybriding it both. You know, yeah. They're running an up-tempo spread variety, but they have the two tight ends. So the advantage that the two tight ends is giving you and the up-tempo spread, it's very hard for these teams to contend with. And guys, the thing that excites me is that the fact, and I, you know, it's early, but by week three and week four, you know, with Rick the first year and the iWrite football, and then Enos after, you know, Central Michigan came in, I'm like, ooh, that's a problem how they ended up playing us. You kind of started to see some of the writings on the wall before the quagmire even started, right? You started seeing what defenses started to try to do, and Miami just couldn't get out of its own way, and it would struggle, lose some games. Coming out of the first two games, and I'm curious after, you know, week four after Clemson, I want to see what teams do to stop this because right now, using my little brain, I can't figure it out because, like, Miami just can come at you in different ways right now, and I want to see how the defenses combat this. I want to see what they're going to do because they're going to try. And when you turn around week one and week two, just put up those kind of performances while still being quote unquote sluggish. Ooh, this is going to be a special offense this year for the Miami Hurricanes. After two games, especially going on the road the way you did against Louisville, putting up 47 and leaving points on the board. Ooh. And I'm telling you right now, I think we're going to have our way with Florida State too. So I don't want to jump the gun, but I see 3-0 in our future.
That's a mess in Tallahassee, boy.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
Even those little, like, practice clips that they post on Twitter and stuff, and it looks like me. Like, like they're doing cone drills and stuff, and it's like, is that a college football player doing that?
Yeah, absolutely, right? No, they admittedly they're in bad shape. I didn't even think you could take a loss on a bye week, but then their coach gets COVID. So I guess that constitutes as a loss too, right? I don't know. Well, I don't want to wish him ill will. Get good luck. Yeah. There you go. Well, hopefully heal up, young man.
I think that was planned because they're not playing the Gators this year. And so, you know, as big of a mess as Norville has created in Tallahassee, he can go into the offseason saying that he hasn't lost to a rival team yet. So,
and you know what? The line jumped again. I think it's getting up to 10.5, 11 now. So, I mean, you gotta see that maybe the pundits are seeing it the same way we are. It's just, you know, that's another program. They just thought after Jimbo and having a number one quarterback and Jameis Winston, it's like they think that number one quarterbacks just fall off trees.
Yeah.
And that Jimbo recruiters are everywhere. No, take it from a Miami fan. Yeah, number one quarterbacks don't fall off trees. And going ahead and recruiting in the top five is an art form in itself. Not everybody can do it. So here you go, looking at the 21-21 class, or 2021 class, excuse me. You essentially see a situation where that class is that's a heavy laden 3-star class. That reminded me of a lot of Al Golden, because Al Golden got a lot of 3-stars, couldn't get the blue chip talent there, and that's exactly what Florida State's class is looking like. So you're in for a rough couple years, Tallahassee. But to take it from a Miami fan who went through it, suck it. That's all I need to say.
Now, the coaches, when you get a guy like De'Eriq King, and it's sad if he's only going to be here for 1 year or whatever, but I'll take it. How obvious is it to the coaches, like, that he's got it? That when you see it, you know it, and you're like, oh, we got a real one now. Versus what we've been dealing with, like, you know, all these kids come in with huge star numbers, and, you know, like, take the quarterback from last year, the Jaren Williams kid, and, you know, the tall kid that's the second stringer. What's his name?
Van Dyke or Cozy?
Jack Allison?
Cozy.
Oh, Nicosi Perry.
Nicosi Perry and stuff. And you like, both of them had so much immaturity that you just see, like, I'm not saying, you know, De'Eriq King's not going to get in trouble or anything, but I just don't see him doing the music video with the cash in his lap or Snapchat nudes or any of this other stuff. And it's got to be such a relief for the coaches to get the kid De'Eriq King and then the first day of practice being like, we got him. We got a real guy now.
You know what, Doc, you bring up an interesting point, and it kind of, you know, when I look at high school kids on film, and that's kind of how it all started for me, because it was just, you know, it was just a hobby. It was just fun. Yeah. I was just like, I love the position. I liked playing it when I played it. And I was like, yeah, let me just go over here and see what they see. And, you know, you could take a guy and he just checks all the boxes, right? He's accurate. He's got an arm. He can run. And you give him a 4-star. You might even give him a 5-star. But it doesn't matter if the kid is just 1-star heart or 1-star head, you know, because it's just never going to matter. You're not going to get the respect of your team. You're not going to earn the right to be called a leader. And if you can't stay on the field because you can't keep from being like, you know, a liability in terms of, are you going to actually play this week because you're going to be suspended? Then what's it for? You know, you just. So it's like there's a lot of times, you know, if I've ever taken flack for like missing on a quarterback or something, it always comes down to the part where it's just the things that you can't see on film. It's like the kid gets gun shy when the bullets fly, or, you know, when it hits the fan, what kind of person is he? Is he the one that's going to go ahead and shift the blame to other? Because, you know, as men, too, right? Do we like that? The guy that never takes fault and ownership for what he did? Oh, is the offensive line's fault? Well, if I would have had time. Well, if the wide receiver didn't drop the ball. That's not how it works. That's like, we don't operate that way. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, hey, it's on me. I got to play better. Even though you know the truth, you know, your wide receivers just dropped 6 balls, right? You know that they did, but what does De'Eriq King say? He says, we left too many plays on the field. We're not happy. We need to get better. What are you, nuts? It's 47 points. The Hurricanes fans are ecstatic that you put up 47 points, but they're not happy. And we're happy that they're not happy. And that stems from De'Eriq King. I promise you that stems from De'Eriq King. And that's the thing that Miami, you got to put the ownership there. You got to make sure that these kids just have it in the head and the heart. No more taking one star heart and one star heads, man. It does not matter. You got to have that leader. And it's good, because a leader like Derek King, even though he could be here one season, you know, he's going to be granted another year next year. But, you know, as of right now, if you ask me, gut instinct, what does he need to prove? He's proving it this year. If he goes ahead and has a really good season, you know, just go ahead and take your chances, young man. And you know, with the loss of his father, he's probably got something even more to prove. And at this level, I just don't see what is left in store. I could be wrong, but if you ask me. But here's the good news. Derek King is such a special kid. I think even after he's gone, he's going to permeate through the program. Because, like you said, Duck, he just showed you what the quarterback room is supposed to look like, right? He showed you the work ethic. He showed you the leadership. He showed you, get these touchdown rings out of here. You know, he showed you, there's always more. There's always better. So I think the Derek King effect could potentially be here a lot longer than just this year.
Yeah. I hope so. Well, I got one last question for you, Ro. So I know we talked to you a lot in the offseason about what to expect with the Rhett Lashley offense, and now we have a 2-game sample size. So I'd like you to just give us like a brief summary, kind of put a neat bow on a review in terms of how is it different than what you expected? How is it the same as what you expected? And what are you excited for the rest of the season, if that makes sense? It doesn't need to be too long, but, you know, just I guess put a nice bow on it.
I think it's exactly what I envisioned. I really do. That's the neat bow. I just think you see what I kind of saw in him as a play caller, and the reason why I favored him. And before there was any announcement, this is the reason why he was my guy, because he showed at SMU he could do more with less. And Miami's done less with more talent in I don't know how long. So you needed somebody to counteract that. So I knew he was the type of guy who was going to take, ultimately, if you're going to give him something, he's going to take it, and he's going to keep taking it until you change. He did that week one with the running game. You don't want to change. We're going to keep running it. And then with Louisville, you want to keep giving me this look with zero safeties over the top? I'm going to keep taking it. And I think that's what's going to happen throughout the rest of the year. I think that's the pretty little bow. Just sit back and relax. He's not going to die on a particular hill. You know, he's just going to adapt. He's going to move, and he's got a feel for the game. And you know, in closing on it too, he is a field coordinator. Like, he's on the field. It's not all analytical driven with him. So it's good in a way, because when you're not that analytical driven, the analytical monster on the other side who has your tendencies can't go ahead and find yours, because he'll just feel it. He'll see it. He'll find it. And just enjoy it. It was long overdue. This was an offensive parched job for years. And now we have a situation where we can all drink happily and just know that we have an offense that can score, because it has, and I think it can continue to score.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on, man. I mean, we always love to hear your analysis. I'd call it expert analysis.
And I'll fight you on that.
Well, I mean, dude, it's more than I'll ever know about football. So we appreciate having you on the Fours Up podcast. I think you really bring an element, you know, that we're not able to give. So thank you so much, man. And make sure everyone's checking out the Orange Bowl Boys. I know you guys already know about them, but I mean, we just appreciate you guys. So anyways, take care, man. Thank you for coming on.
Fours Up, baby. Let's go.
Take care, bro.
Cool. Well, that was amazing, man.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you surprised with how much we're running the ball? Because I know a lot of people thought Rhett Lashley would equate to more of an air raid just because of his time at SMU, you know, with Sonny Dykes. But I actually kind of pegged him as a power run guy. So that's why I was excited. I'm kind of with you, you know, like the South Florida, like high school, you know, programs, they put out such talented athletes. You know, I'm thinking why get a system where it relies on quarterback play when our strength has always been our running back room? And
I mean, just thinking back to the arrogance or stubbornness of the D'Onofrio thing, Yeah. And then, like, the Rick thing with his son and stuff. And you just, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, part of me thinks that if all of a sudden I got hired by the University of Miami and I could name my offensive coordinator, so I'm going to bring in Roe. And whatever, it doesn't work, right? And me and Roe are boys, and he's making a few hundred thousand a year, and I'm making $1 million a year or whatever. And I'm like, we're going to do this until they fire us. Like, I've had jobs like that where yeah. you're like, I can't fix it. But as long as I'm not getting fired, I'm showing back up the next day and doing the same, you know, what I know how to do.
Yeah.
And, man, like, with all the resources available, that D'Onofrio has to be such a tool. Because you can get on the phone and talk with Jimmy Johnson, Ray Lewis, Sapp, Ed Reed, all of them. And they would all be like, oh, let me explain to you what you're doing wrong with Chicolo or this and that. And you yeah. can take the advice or not. But the fact that D'Onofrio and Golden stood there with their arms folded and were like, no, this worked at Penn State or wherever they came from, or yeah. Temple. And you're like, you know, the Miami and Tri-County, Palm Beach, Broward, Dade, those football athletes, they're different than anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's I'm not a huge recruiting guy or whatever, but you see, like, the Tate Martell's highlight reel from high school. Dude, you're doing that there.
Yeah.
Now come here and do that. Do that at Northwestern. Like, yeah. you know, it's a different game. It's a really yep. a different game.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, nothing says defense like good old New Jersey style Al Golden football, right?
Man, that was such a bad era.
Yeah, it's working well for him as the tight ends coach of the Cincinnati Bengals or whatever he's doing now.
I mean, those doofuses were like when Jersey Shore came and did the season in South Beach. Like, oh, you're going to rent the convertible, drive up and down Ocean Drive, uh-huh. You know, dance and fist pump till 5 a.m. But you're a visitor here. You're not one of us. No, people, you know, locals don't do that. We don't yep. spray tan, you know, and wear rave sunglasses and do all that. That's for people to come out of town and do that. And you're like, you see Golden and D'Onofrio and was like, you guys don't fit in. You guys don't belong here.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm with you 100%. I'm so happy for, I don't know. I mean, I complained a lot this offseason. I was very excited about Rhett Lashley. He was my dude. But, you know, I was kind of just in the mindset of like, you know, like I'm not going to buy into this until I see it. You know, we've been disappointed too many times. I bought into the Dan Enos thing. And, it's just it's a great product. I couldn't be happier with it. And mostly that, as Roman brought up, he's the type of guy who, one, is going to cater his offense to his personnel. You can see because, you know, I'm borrowing the terminology that Roman just gave me, you know, the 12 set with two tight ends. Like, he's willing to push that because our two best pass catchers are tight ends. And he's right. willing to run the ball for 400 yards in a game because it's working, right? Because that's what the defense yeah. is giving him. And as common sense as that sounds, we just haven't seen that here. And that is mind-blowing. It's the type of thing where you just have to scratch your head and just be like, well, why? Like, if it's such common sense, why wouldn't you just do it then?
You know, it goes back to De'Arik King. You got to have the dude that can do it, that can pull it off. You know, you never know what concepts they were trying to run last year when the coach turns around and the quarterbacks are poking each other with pencils and stuff. And you're like, guys, huh. You know, like one special quarterback, no matter where it is, you look anywhere around college football and you get that special quarterback and you can do serious damage. Drew Brees at Purdue, Favre at whatever Mississippi school he went to and ended up beating Florida State. And, yep. You know what I mean? You get that special quarterback, and Miami's just gone so many years without having that kid that pops. They've had some yep. guys that can throw it and some ballers and this and that, but not the complete package where you're like, oh, this kid's smart. He gets it. He doesn't panic. And, I mean, he's going to run into some adversity. Yep. You know that. Like that Clemson game, that's going to be brutal. But yep. I feel a lot better going into it with him than I did with the last couple of quarterbacks we've had. And I don't yeah. even mean to hate.
Yep. You know, I'm with you. This is a safe space to hate on former quarterbacks because I know I've done it plenty.
I mean, like I've talked about it before on the show. I'm not a big fan of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because they're like punters. They're not on the team.
Yeah.
They wear a different colored jersey.
Yep. They're divas.
They get treated differently.
Yep.
I didn't like that Enos guy was always like standing next to the quarterback, like talking to him in his ear.
Yep.
And that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like being micromanaged.
Yeah.
And I know that's the big thing now. Like the offensive coordinators, all offensive coordinators want to move up and get head coaching jobs or whatever. So there's motivation for them to flex the passing game. Yeah. And because nobody's, you know, you run the ball, you're not getting hired in the NFL on your running ability. People want sophisticated passing attack. It's just a breath of fresh air. I'm just so glad that we've got this kid.
Agreed, man. Agreed. Well, so we're going to switch up gears a little bit now. You know, we had Ro come on to give us some really good, you know, technical analysis, some X's and O's, stuff like that. But now we're going to have two Miami Hurricanes fans on just to kind of take the temperature of the fan base. The first one that we got coming on is our guy, Ethan. He's very active on like Kane's Twitter. You know, he's always interacting with us, Marsh and I. So I'm going to dial in Ethan real quick.
Yep.
Ethan, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much. How are you guys?
Doing good, Ethan.
Not too bad. So I'm here with Better Doug. He's helping me host today. But man, we want to call and find out how you're feeling after that Louisville game. I mean, on the road against the number 18th ranked team, we were an underdog, and boy, did we show out. I mean, 47 points. We left some points on the field. Like, tell me what you're feeling, man, because you're a younger fan, right? You're kind of like me. So this is a foreign experience. Going on the road in prime time and kicking some butt. So tell me how it feels, man.
I tell you what, it's relieving to finally get to see something like that. I mean, we got to see it in 2017, but outside of that, it's been scarce. I mean, really not at all. And I'm so happy with that win. The offense, my goodness, 47 points.
Yeah.
I couldn't have dreamed of it. I thought I was expecting about 30, but 47. Whew,
yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious as to how you felt going into the game. I was a little more outspoken about the UAB game not being very impressive to me. I understood that we took what we could get with the run game, but I thought our defense was a little mushy. You know, we didn't really take advantage in the passing game at all. So I was very concerned going into this Louisville game, but I want to get your take. How did you feel before the game?
I couldn't agree more with the UAB game. I agree. The defense looked mushy. I felt like we looked slow. I thought we looked slow. It wasn't inspiring, and I was very nervous going into the Louisville game. And, you know, I kind of – you know, I asked you guys that question. I'm like, how much can really change? And to you guys' point, I didn't really I didn't really look into Louisville. And when they opened up the game on TV, and they're like, they're showing the stats, and, Tutu had 1,200 yards receiving. JV and Hawkins had, I can't remember how many yards. He had a lot of rushing yards. And Malik Cunningham had been impressive. And I was like, oh, man. I was nervous. I was like, goodness, you know, these guys, I didn't do my homework on these guys. We haven't fared well in prime time, but
yeah. Well, last episode we did, we had Cam Underwood on, and Duck, this is a stat that I want to share with you, cause I just want to hear your reaction to it. So I think it was since 2005. So it's since we've been down a little bit, on the road versus ranked opponents, Miami was like 3-24.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And that sounds about right, honestly. That was going into this Louisville game. But, you know, on Twitter, I made the joke that in my time as a Miami Hurricane fan, which I really got into it around 2005, 2006, you know, in my time as a Canes fan, I said it feels like we're 3-46, you know, when we play in prime time at night. You know, and the only wins being Virginia Tech and Notre Dame in 2017, and then the Ja'Cory Harris game in Tallahassee on Labor Day night. I think that was like 2009 or 2010, something like that. But I mean, Duck, how does it feel like you hearing that stat? Because you were around for our most dominant periods.
Well, yeah, like, you know, everybody says, and I have fun on Twitter, and then there's a lot of people that are like, oh, Duck's too negative, this and that. Well, you should have seen me on the AOL boards back in the early 2000s. It was the exact opposite.
Yep.
I was unbearable on the other degree, you know? So, like, you got to put it in some sort of context, right? Like, everyone likes to say, oh, that we've stunk for 20 years or 19 years or whatever it is. Well, there was the 5 years of probation, and probation hurts. Like, it's a punishment, you know, and maybe the SEC can skirt around it and still be undefeated during probation years and stuff. But Miami couldn't. And there was like a 2-year cloud on either side of the probation.
Yeah.
Or like the 2 or 3 year cloud leading up to it, where we were self-imposing and skipping bowl games and all that stuff. So it ended up really being like an 8-year sentence. Yeah. You know, probationary period. So you subtract that, and now it's okay. Now it's down to we've had 11 bad years, which is still too much. But they've made, like we were talking with Roe, we've made some horrendous coaching decisions, hires, and then those coaches have recruited the quarterback position poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a killer.
Yeah.
Like you just keep. You should just keep recruiting quarterbacks over and over until you find the guy or identify him. Like, you know, there's not always a Tebow or a Andrew Luck or somebody, but we got to do better.
Agreed, man. And Ethan, I want to kick it back to you. So after watching the first two games, I want you to tell me what aspects on offense and defense, so multifaceted question, what aspects you're most excited about and which aspects give you the most anxiety or which are you most worried about for both sides of the ball?
All right, so I think we're most excited about D'Arre King. He pretty well, I mean, it appeared like we didn't really open up the passing playbook against UAB, which probably is why he only had like 145 yards. But he was good on the ground. He's just looked amazing. And then, you know, his connection to Brevin Jordan Saturday was thrilling. You know, finally we've got a guy that's going to take advantage of having a stud tight end like Brevin Jordan. It was just awesome to see. And I tell you what, the offensive line, I think we gave up a sack early and I was like, oh man. But as the game progressed, you could really see the improvements. We were holding up in pass protection, which wasn't existent last year.
Yep.
It didn't happen. Yeah. I'd say offensively wise, what I'd be a little worried about, and that can change. The wide receivers, we didn't see a lot of them, in my opinion. We saw it was nice to see Mark Pope get involved and make some plays, although he did have that – he had that one drop that went right between his arms, and I was just – I was sick about that one. I was like, oh, you got it. You got to catch that.
Yeah.
My goodness. But the offense just looked explosive. It was amazing to see, and I was watching the game. I was a little upset with us running those inside zones. And in fact, I was watching Roman's YouTube account and his student of the game. And he was talking exactly about that, the inside zone. And he's like, well, some people were upset about us running it over and over again. And then he pointed out, and I mean, educated me, run that over and over again. And the defense begins to look for it. And then we do that. We run that play action and we hit Jalen Knighton on that 75-yard touchdown. Yep. I mean, just brilliant.
Yeah.
As far as defense, that run defense is bothering me. It is bothering me. It just, we just, I don't know. It was just getting gashed. It felt like, I thought the pass defense played well. Bubba Bolden, my goodness. Yeah. That man is a stud. He was all over the field and in critical spots. I mean, it was a thing of beauty. Our pass rush, I thought, looked as good as we kind of expected to be. I thought Jalen Phillips looked better than I had anticipated. For a guy, that hasn't played much football, that had been off for a long time, I wasn't overly impressed with our pass rush against UAB, but I thought they showed out against Louisville.
Yeah.
And Phillips looked really good, and so did Roche. I mean, just the pass rushing group as a whole looked really good. I thought our pass defense played pretty well. I thought our corners played well, which was good to hear and good to see, because that's been an issue. We didn't really hear Ivy's name called, and I think that's probably a good thing, because, in the past, that's generally been a bad thing. So I thought our defense looked good outside. I don't know. There was – the run defense was a problem. I really felt like we should not have given up 34 points. They played really well in the first half, and things kind of changed in the second half, but that can be the success of the run game, and they hit those play action passes.
I'm with you, man. I'm a little worried about the defense. I feel like one of these games, the defense, like, I get that we're kind of a bend don't break thing. That's kind of Manny's shtick, and Blake Baker is one of his disciples. The thing that worries me about bend don't break is eventually you're going to have a game, like, statistically speaking, you're going to have a game where you just break.
I have a feeling it might be the Clemson game.
I'm worried that there's going to be another one too. I think we might just get out muscled by Clemson, but I think there's going to be another one where just some mental errors or lack of preparation or lack of focus causes our defense to just break instead of flexing so hard. And these long drives that UAB and Louisville have both been getting on us that only result in 3 or 0 points are going to start turning into 7 points every time. And I really don't want us to blow a game like Virginia Tech or UNC that, after watching this team for 2 weeks, I think we should beat both of those teams. I think it's fair to be confident and say that we should win those games. I just don't want to see our defense just break consistently all game.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Duck, what do you think? What do you think about that, Duck?
I think the defense is going to improve a little bit. How old or what class are the linebackers? I know the one kid's a senior.
Yeah, so Zach McLeod is a redshirt senior, and then Jennings is Bradley Jennings. I think he's a redshirt sophomore, but he doesn't have playing experience because of injuries.
And the third linebacker?
Sam Brooks is a true sophomore.
He's a sophomore, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, that's young. I think UAB was almost all seniors, and we never have that. We're always super young because everybody leaves early.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, Miami's a unique situation. So I think they're going to do better. I think the kids have to toughen up. And then when you're super hyper aggressive pass rush, like Roche and Phillips, that kind of goes hand in hand with being soft against the run.
Yeah,
because, like Jason Taylor was a killer going after quarterbacks, but he wasn't a big run stopper.
Yeah.
None of those skinny speed dudes are. So you give up a little bit, when you play that style.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I was glad that the big kid in the middle, Silvera, made some plays.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Because that is the position that is going to determine how badass your defense is.
Yeah.
That play where he blew the lineman back into the running back.
Crazy.
I had to smile at that one.
Yeah. Well, Ethan, I got one last question for you, man. And thank you so much for coming on. I want to hear, just give us a quick rundown of how you feel about the FSU game and give us a score prediction for that.
Well, as you guys are well aware, there's never a sure thing in the FSU game, despite how bad I thought they looked against Georgia Tech. But, man, I just cannot see us not killing them. I feel, I mean, that Louisville game was reassuring, to say the least. So I think we're going to absolutely beat the brakes off of them. And I want to say, man, I want to say we'll beat them like 35-10.
Cool.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's covering the spread. And, you know, I think, I don't know, I don't want to jinx us, but I want to even go worse than that, man. I really do. But anyways, thanks for coming on, Ethan. Love having you. And thanks for, you know, always supporting us. You know, I know Marsh and I both really appreciate it.
Well, I'm so happy to be able to get on here and talk to you guys. It's always awesome talking.
Where do you live, Ethan?
I just moved down to here in Miami. I moved from Iowa so I could come watch the Canes play. I go to FIU right now.
Nice. Yeah. You guys, I can't believe there's so many Canes fans from, like, what is that, Mountain West?
Yeah, well, Midwest, Mountain West, yeah.
I've got friends that are Iowa fans, but they're a good program, but there's no way I could be an Iowa fan. They'll be good, but they'll never be a national title contender, and we can't really say that yet, but, you know, the way Miami's set up, we've always got a chance.
Yeah. Agreed, man. Agreed. Well, anyways, thanks, Ethan. And as always, go Canes, man.
Go Canes.
Yep. Yeah. Does it, Duck, does it, I mean, do you like hearing that there's guys like me and Ethan out there that have no ties to South Florida but are big Miami fans in this younger generation?
Especially the younger generation. I can understand it, guys that are my age that saw the glory days and were like, you know, it's kind of how people become Cowboys fans, you know, nationally or universally or whatever. They see them so much and stuff. But you guys, like, that came in when the team started struggling.
Yep.
It's dedication.
Yeah, dude, it's been tough, honestly. But I don't know. I think it takes a certain personality, you know, and that's very much my personality, is I've always been emboldened against adversity.
And you're a Heat fan too, right?
No, I'm a Utah Jazz fan.
Jazz, okay.
Yeah.
And who's your NFL team?
It's been kind of recent, but I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. I just converted about 2 years ago.
Because?
Just because. I had wanted a team. The Bills were a team that I've always liked, and you know, they drafted Josh Allen, who I saw twice in college, and you know, he's, I guess he grew up in California, but he played at Wyoming. And I was like, you know what? Sure. Like, I've always liked the Bills anyway. I would love to be passionate about a team, and it's kind of sticking, you know, like I feel myself emotionally connected to them, which is what I've wanted.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the Bills here, that's like, equal to Gator hatred.
Yeah. Like, do you guys hate the Pats or the Bills more?
The Bills.
Really?
Jealous of New England, of course, but the hatred, like, Dolphins and Patriots fans don't fight in the stands, but Dolphins and Buffalo fans fight.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, it was so bad back in the late 80s and early 90s that the Buffalo, they had, you know, four or five Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And all we had was Marino.
Yeah.
So we'd lose.
So how was it, like, with Jim Kelly as their quarterback? So how would a guy like you, I mean, because you're a Finns fan, right?
Yeah.
So how would a guy like you, who's a big Canes fan and a big Dolphins fan at that time, like, what was it like cheering against Jim Kelly, or how did you feel about Jim Kelly?
Well, we loved Jim Kelly, but we wanted to win.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, when they kept getting stomped by Dallas in Super Bowls, like, I wanted Jim Kelly to win one.
Uh-huh.
And my mom loved Jim Kelly. I mean, loved him. But the rest of the Buffalo, and it's really their fans. It's not so much the team.
Yep.
It's their fans were so obnoxious.
Yeah.
That, like, it's still now, and the Dolphins haven't been relevant in, you know, however many years, and Buffalo neither. But it's like, as soon as you said Buffalo fan, like, Buffalo.
Yuck. Yeah. That's, as a Jazz fan, I can relate to that, because that's how we feel about Lakers fans, man.
Right.
Is like, Lakers fans just give me the chills, because I just, I mean, not all of them are this way. I have a lot of friends that are Lakers fans, and they're like intelligent basketball fans, right?
Yeah.
But there is also a large group of Lakers fans that don't know anything about basketball. And they just, they're the guys that just pound the laughing emoji and are just, oh, Kobe, you know, five rings, you know, three-peat with Phil Jackson and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, or the ones that, you know, they'll, when they're talking trades, you know, they're like, well, you'll give us your best player and we'll give you some crappy guy that we picked up off of the street. You know, I just, ugh. Yeah, so I know what you're talking about. I feel that way about Lakers fans.
And then another weird thing, the Jazz and the Heat are two of very few teams that don't end in S.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that is weird. They're like a plurality with no S.
Right.
Yeah, it does always sound weird to say he's a Heat or he's a Jazz.
Right.
Yeah, but anyways, let's call in our last guest for the day. It's Max Kesselhalt. Kesselhalt? I'm not sure how you say his last name, but it's Max. Max, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Hey, thanks for stopping by with us, man. So I'm here with Better Duck, who's helping me co-host today.
What's up, Max?
What's going on, Better Duck?
All right.
Yeah, so dude, we want to get your, you know, your knee jerk reaction from the Louisville game. I know it's been 2 days, but you know, tell us what you're thinking, man.
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance really to rewatch the game yet, which I usually love to do a couple times. But at first glance, I think obviously the offense played well. We scored every single drive in the second half. There wasn't a single possession that we didn't score in the second half, which is great. You know, I would have loved to convert more touchdowns. We had a little too many field goals, which is obviously nice that we have a kicker that can make them now. And I liked that they put in Sam Brooks for a good amount, because I knew we needed that speed to cover Louisville. And so I was hoping, you know, pregame that Brooks would get some more burn, because he's faster than, you know, the two starters. But you know, other than that, I think we played okay. You know, obviously the team isn't satisfied. I don't know if you guys have listened to the interviews and stuff like that, but the team's not satisfied whatsoever. You know, Bubba probably had his best game as a Cane and he's not satisfied, you know, so it's great to hear that. But I think, you know, we got a lot of guys in there that haven't played a ton of minutes and played well with their minutes. I think Decorey made a couple of nice plays. You know, you have Jared Harrison Hunt, who was outstanding, and you also have Wayman Steed getting some minutes, and even Chance Williams made a tackle. I think it was on special teams, but Cameron Williams was a stud, you know.
Yeah.
And you had Marcus Clark with his first career tackle, so you know, that's always nice to see.
Yeah, I was really happy to see Cam Williams kind of pop, because you know, when it comes to our bench with our pass rushers, Jafari Harvey was getting all the love, and for good reason, because he's a freak. But the fact that we had another, you know, another bench pass rusher that wasn't Harvey that popped, I mean, that just made me feel good. Because with how Jalen Phillips is playing, I'm starting to feel like he might not be here next year.
No, I 100% agree. I think he probably leaves. And that's another, you know, thing that, you know, we've had to deal with a lot is these juniors leaving, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very, very important that we have a guy like Cameron Williams and start getting Chance Williams some playing time as well, because it's going to be their time next year, you know? So getting these young guys game reps early on in the season is only going to help them out for next year.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be a shame if, you know, guys like, I mean, let's say Phillips does leave, and then, you know, we'll have put three high level pass rushers into one draft, you know, with Rousseau, Roche, and Phillips all leaving the team, hypothetically, right? It would be a shame if our position of strength with pass rusher, you know, becomes one of these things that we just take so much attrition that we drop down to average. But, you know, hopefully with the way we're recruiting it, the way that we're developing, you know, having Harvey and Cam Williams, that, you know, we can come back into next offseason and be like, hey, this is still a position of strength. We're going to be able to get to the quarterback no matter who is there.
No, I think if both of them leave, it's still going to be a position of strength, especially with a guy like Jared Harrison-Hunt who can play on the outside as well if needed. But you also have the other freshman, you know, Chance Williams on top of Cameron Williams with Jafari Harvey. You know, and then we have a couple of other young guys that are going to start vying for playing time. You know, obviously we have the big five-star coming in at D tackle next season.
Yeah, Leonard Taylor.
Yeah, Leonard Taylor. So we're going to have, you know, a lot of young guys with not a ton of game reps. You know, I'd like to see Jafari Harvey make the most of his playing time this year. You know, you haven't really heard his name a ton outside of, you know, just practice in the off season. But in terms of game day stuff, you know, you haven't really heard his name called at all. So I'd like to see him kind of get more involved throughout the season for sure.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, man. And so I asked this question to our last guest, but I want to know what things made you the most excited and which areas you're looking for more from our team.
Excited, not turning the ball over. That's the first thing. You know, that's two games in a row without turning the ball over at all. I guess technically we did in the first game with Mark Pope, but I won't really call that a turnover because it didn't happen on offense. So no offensive turnovers so far. You know, getting the tight end involved, both of them, to be honest. Will Mallory's one that they called back shouldn't have been called back. Scaife barely even moved at all. So I liked the fact that we were able to get those guys involved and getting at least one of the freshman running backs some scores. You know, it was great. Rooster got two touchdowns. As far as a little concern, obviously the corner is going to be a concern the entire season. I think Al Blades played great. I mean, he was the number one guy in the country, I think, and PFF against the pass this past week. So he was great. Tecori Couch, I thought, played, you know, he played okay, maybe a little bit better than okay. And the fact that we didn't hear DJ Ivy's name is a good thing, right? So yeah. So that was definitely good. I'd like to see a little more consistency out of Bradley Jennings. You know, he led the team in Agreed. Tackles week one, and he only had one tackle, which was a sack against Louisville. But, you know, one of the things that I don't like is we don't really get to see everyone's snap count, right? There's not really a great place to see everybody's snap count. So unless you're counting the snaps while watching the game, you know, when you look at the stat sheet, Sam Brooks had six tackles and Bradley Jennings had one. Well, how many snaps did they play, you know? McLeod had nine, so he was in the game a lot. And from what it looked like, Bradley Jennings was in the game a good bit, but we don't have a snap count, so it's hard to say. But, you know, I like the fact that we do have some speed that we can sprinkle in with Brooks and Avery Huff, to be completely honest. And I think all of you in the Skype and anyone listening is going to agree with me. We should never put Rangone in the game. If anyone's going to get playing time on defense, it should be Avery Huff. And there's a rumor that he doesn't know the playbook well, and that could be the reason for not getting any playing time. But I don't understand why we have a guy like Rangone in who usually comes in at the striker position when we have two strikers that are far better than him, you know? Yeah. And it's no knock on Rangone. You know, he works hard. He played pretty well for us last season in a couple of the games. But we have guys that are better and faster, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's just a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And you know, you mentioned Scaife not moving at all. I think there was our pass protection got better, but there was a few other plays where Scaife didn't move at all. So,
yep.
Yeah, I was, I don't like to bag on kids too hard, right? Because I know that they're all doing their best and stuff, and as long as they're preparing and showing up. One thing that did worry me is, you know, we saw a change in the starter at left guard. It was Usman Traore in week one. It's now Jakai Clark. But at right guard, there was multiple plays, at least two that I saw, where De'Aaron King got hit. You know, one of them was a sack. The other one was just one that he just got lit up after he let the ball go. And on both of those plays, Scaife did not touch a single defensive lineman. He didn't even engage in a block.
Yep.
And so that's something to watch. You know, I feel like our pass blocking did increase substantially after halftime. You know, but early on, like, that's kind of been a theme, is for 3 out of 4 halves that we've played this season, our pass blocking's been bad. So, you know, just something that we need to keep an eye on. And obviously Rhett Lashley can scheme around that and do whatever. But Duck, I want to get your take on what do you think about our linebackers and corners, man? Those are two position groups that I have long chastised. And I want to hear your take.
I need to see more. I need to see more because I think they're behind a little bit with this weird season we're having.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I think they're going to get better every week. I wasn't so crazy so down on Ivy after week one, mm-hmm. because a couple of those I thought that the pass rush should have got there.
Yeah.
You know, especially like if it's a downfield throw, I'm blaming the pass rush, especially when those are two of the flashiest guys on the team. Or yeah. Not flashiest, but two of the bigger names on the team. It's like, dude, get the quarterback already.
Yeah.
Don't make a kid, you know, cover for 35 yards.
Yeah.
Especially in college.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I thought was interesting, and you know, I said this to someone, and they thought it was like scheming by Louisville, by their offensive coordinator, and I'm not smart enough to be able to tell, you know, if that's true or not, so I don't know. But I noticed that Bubba Bolden had a fantastic game, right? He was probably our best player on defense. But there was the drive that Tutu Atwell caught a touchdown pass. They gouged, like they managed to isolate Bubba Bolden onto Tutu Atwell in man coverage. And I don't know if that was by their design or if it was Blake Baker saying, hey, I don't trust our corners. Bubba, you're our best defender, so you go cover him on man. But Bolden got gouged twice. And the reason why I bring this up is because even though he's our best defender, that's not a, you know, it's either him or Jalen Phillips, in my opinion. Like, even though he's our best defender, the fact that we're moving him out of position to do something that is not, you know, like he's a safety, right? Like playing man coverage is not why he's here. The fact that we have to move him out of position just shows that we are not confident in the guys that are supposed to do that job. And that's, you know, Ivy and Takori Couch and, you know, I like Blades, but that's something that I think we need to watch too. Max, I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I read an article when Bubba, and obviously I watched a lot of Bubba, you know, being from California. So I watched a lot of Bubba, you know, before I watched him at Bishop Gorman with Brevin Jordan and Tate Martell, because they're all West Coast. And when I read this scouting report on him when he transferred to Miami, a lot of the analysts around the country said he might actually be better suited as a longer and thinner corner because of the range and speed that he has. So I think that Miami and Blake Baker thought he might be their best guy to cover Tutu because, one, he can rough him up with his size, but at the same time, he can chase him down. And the two plays he did give up to Tutu, he kept Tutu in front of him. You know, he didn't let him run loose. And I think that was our game plan. We're gonna play back and we're gonna make them beat us short. We're not gonna let Tutu catch a little slant and take it to the house like he did the season before. So I think it was just part of our game plan. And especially when you play a team like Louisville who loves to run the ball, and they did a great job of it, if you have a safety, you know, playing man-to-man guarding, you know, 2-2, and it's a run, he's already closer up, right? So he's already closer to make that tackle on the running back. So I think it definitely had to do – I think it had to do less with the fact that we don't trust our guys and more that they just thought that that was a good matchup for us.
Okay. Okay, well, I got one last question for you, man, before we wrap things up here. I want to know how you're feeling about this Florida State game and give me a projection.
So Florida State's always a tricky one. You know, on paper, we're better than them this year. On the field so far, we're better than them this year. But it doesn't matter if we're 0-10 and Florida State's 10-0 or vice versa. It's always going to be a dogfight. They play their best game when they play against Miami. You know, there's a lot of things going on with that program. You know, there's no Mike Norvell. You got a couple of guys that are transferring. But I think it's going to be potentially closer than a lot of other people think just because of the nature of the game. I still think we win. I would probably say 42-24.
Okay. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, Max, let me ask you a question. I asked the last guy. Are you not from Florida? You don't live here?
No, I do not live in Florida. I was born and raised in San Diego. My dad went to the University of Miami, so I inherently was a fan.
Nice. All right. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on, Max. You know, I appreciate, you know, we got that Twitter chat with a bunch of guys, and, you know, it's been cool, you know, hearing your takes and stuff. And thanks for coming on. Appreciate having you, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on, guys.
See you, Max.
No problem.
See you.
Go Canes. All right, Doug. Well, thank you so much for helping me out today, man. I appreciate you.
Good guests. Good guests tonight. That kid Max, he was really smart, knew a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's a cool kid. I've been getting to know him a little bit just recently, and you know, I was definitely happy that he was interested in coming on. So just a few things before me and you wrap up, if you've got a little bit of time.
Got it. Yeah.
So you know, I love what you do on Twitter. You're my favorite Twitter follow. I, you know, and admittedly, I didn't get you at first.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, we talked about that with, you know, there's going to be a lost interview of Better Duck that I publish later this week. I actually am already thinking about it. I'm going to brand it as Duck Week on the fourth.
Nice.
On the Force Up podcast. But we talked about it. We talked about the Big Lebowski, where the first time you watch it, it just goes right over your head.
Right.
You know, and you're like, these guys are idiots. You know, like, this is a movie about, like, the dumbest people ever. And, you know, I'm not saying that's how I felt about your, you know, you and your Twitter account. But, like, it you come off very brash and sarcastic. And it went right over my head.
Right.
You know, when I was first getting into it, I was just like, who is this dude? And now that I've gotten to know you, I have to say, you were like the funniest dude. And where I'm going with this is, as exciting as this season has been so far, you know, we've solved a lot of the stupid problems. We have a great kicker. We have a great offensive mind. We have a great quarterback. Our defense, you know, I think it's one of our worst in the last few years, but at least it's steady, right? It's not giving our offense fits. I want to hear, like, the best Better Duck rant. Like, what is your sticking point right here? What's the butt? You know, because I could say all those things, and I want to hear what is your butt.
Well, the butt is we gave up 500 yards to Louisville. Like, yeah. Louisville is a renegade program. I talked about this a little bit on my podcast. They're not a premier elite school. They had Lamar Jackson. They had Teddy Bridgewater. They put out some players here and there. But for the most part, they take players that can't get into Miami.
Yeah.
So giving up 500 yards, I realize I'm showing my age and everything now, that the days of, you know, games being 14-10 are over and 200 yards of offense. But I just can't get over, you know, they Louisville threw for 300 and rushed for 200.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, I said after the UAB game that even though our stats on defense looked really good, that we only we gave up less than 300 yards total, only 80 yards of rushing. Like it, the optics weren't great to me. I watched that team and I thought this is a team that we should have beat down. You know, like they moved the ball way too well on occasion, especially when they had their first quarterback in, because they did a little bit of musical chairs. And that second quarterback that they'd throw out there was terrible. But when they had their starter in there, they weren't half bad moving the ball against us. So like the optics on defense haven't been great in either game. I did think we actually improved this week, even though it looked worse. But I just think, you know, we might have flipped that switch and we're back to defense being the weak side of the ball for us now, man.
That's going to be tough for me to accept. So I'll be ranting. Like they've got to improve. And, you know, like Max was saying earlier, like I'm not going for the huge win over FSU by, you know, multiple touchdowns in this and that, because think of how lousy we were. And we were within one play of beating the Jameis Winston teams.
Yep.
And Miami was bad, you know, like struggling with Duke and other stuff. But those kids, they know each other. And also a little bit of Louisville is that those kids know each other, too. I know there was a kid from St. Thomas and another from American Heritage. So there's familiarity, and that familiarity is tough. Like Miami has two. I'd much rather play a team that looks and acts like Miami.
Yep.
Then play a team that's completely opposite, like
Wisconsin
and Boston College.
Yeah.
That's a big team that's tough, that is going to play for four quarters. You know, so I mean, Florida State, they're going to match up exactly like Miami. They're going to look like mirror images of each other, except we have Derek King and they have that Gumby.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really the difference. You know, we might be a little bit better at some positions. They might be better at some positions, but the huge factor is going to be Derek King.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you, man. Well, so you mentioned your podcast earlier. You know, now that we're wrapping up, I would love for you to tell everyone what you got going on. Talk about your pod, anything else that you're working on. And just tell us what it's about.
Well, you know, I put out content pretty regularly. I do YouTube seriously, and I've got a couple of YouTube channels, and I executive produce, co-own the Fishing Podcast, which is it's fun. And my best friend, my buddy Jeff Maggio, is like the big one of the best fishermen in Florida, in the world. And he, we got to have him on Fours Up one night because he played at St. Thomas. I've talked about him before. Uh-huh. And he was a corner at UConn. I mean, he knows a lot about football, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, since I have everything all set up, why not just, when I feel like it, throw out a quick podcast on the Canes? You know, I've already got the software and the mics and everything is all set up. And I'll probably end up doing some more. I might do a music podcast.
Yeah,
because I love how everybody's friendly on that. You guys work with Roe and you work with me and are giving me a chance to promote my stuff and back vice versa, because none of us are in competition with each other.
Yeah,
we're in competition with Netflix.
Yeah, correct.
It's so easy to say like, oh, you know, those guys, they're trying to do podcasting, too. You know, the OBB boys, they shouldn't be on because we're promoting them. No, we're all in this together. And the rising tide lifts all the ships. And the way how this content game works. And I just saw the president of what's his name? Hastings Reed or whatever, the president of Netflix talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's been like this for a decade now with YouTube, is if they're watching my stuff or listening to my stuff, they're not listening to theirs. And that's a huge threat to media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People have been able to find their own media that they like now.
Yeah.
Like, the media is so gigantic, and half of the country hates one type of media, and the other half hates the other half of the media.
Yeah.
But at the grassroots level, people like you and Marsh, and people like Roe, and people like me, we're creating our own stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, I got whatever, it wasn't a lot, but I got, like, 66 people on my last podcast that listened to it. Those are 66 people that weren't watching Cobra Kai at that time of day.
Yeah.
You know, and when it grows exponentially, like my YouTube stuff, the YouTube numbers are crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 100 million views. And some days I've had, it goes anywhere from like 70,000 views a day to 200,000.
Jeez.
And you're
amazing, man.
You're just thinking, like, we could be at the football game, and I tell my buddy Jeff, like, see all the people in the stadium? That's how many people watch the fishing videos today.
That's ridiculous, man.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, and good for you guys. Like, that is so cool. You know, like it's, I don't know, Forza doesn't do anything near that. I mean, that's, like, I'm hoping one day we can do that in a month. You know, but like, just thinking about that is mind blowing to me. Like, that's so exciting for you guys. And but I'm it, with you.
It happened the same way, because I put up I used to put out my fishing videos on VHS, and we would make them play it at a bar, or we would, you know, play it at each other's houses, because I made funny fishing videos and crazy fish and stuff. And then YouTube happened in 2006. And we were just thinking that it was a distribution point for us. Like, oh, now, like, you know, three or four of my friends can watch the videos without us having to peddle these VHS tapes. Yeah. And then one video got like 100 views. And we were like, who are these, you know, 96 other people that are watching it?
Yeah.
And then that video got 1,000 views. And you're like, wow, 1,000 views. And I mean, you know, it took like years.
Yeah.
But it's going all the way back to 2006. And then probably in 2010, 2011, I started to really get serious about it. And then the numbers really exploded.
Yeah.
And it's just
it's amazing, man. That's so cool. And so one thing I wanted to mention is, you know, you're talking about us versus Netflix. And I love the way that media is going, because it's allowing for niche, like niche media to become a thing, you know, and you talked about music a little earlier. When I was younger, I was really into like 80s rock and 70s rock. And when you look at like the album numbers that those guys were doing, like, you know, the number of units that Led Zeppelin and Van Halen and Guns N' Roses and Metallica were moving were just insane, especially, you know, but if you think of it, like, there was no market for niche music, really, because it was radio and record stores. You know, there wasn't, and it's like, you're not going to buy a record of someone that you've never heard of. I mean, maybe some people would.
But, right. Small percentage.
Right. Right. And the internet has just changed that so much, because I think it allows things for like me and Marsh to do just Miami football. You know, it's it's not even just football. It's just college football. And it's not even just that. It's not even ACC football. It's the Miami Hurricanes. You know, we're taking such a small piece of pie, but modern media has allowed that.
And then the crazy thing, you know, you bring up Zeppelin or Pink Floyd or Black Sabbath. Not only are their releases huge, but then like every year, boys turn from 13 to 14 and then they discover it and they buy it again. So they go platinum again. And they've been doing that, you know, up until the mid 2000s, when, you know, the whole bottom of the music industry just fell out.
Yeah.
But the kids are still finding Led Zeppelin, and Jimmy Page is still getting gigantic royalty checks every month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm someone who, I mean, we talk Van Halen all the time on the Twitter timeline. Like, I was born the same year that their album For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge came out. Actually, no, after that. I was born after that. Because that was 91. I was born in 93. So, but I mean, Eddie Van Halen's the one that got me into music. And I made a replica of his guitar from 1978. Yeah, so I mean, like, you're spot on. You know, is kids like me, like, they hear a Van Halen song for the first time, and I'm like, you know, I didn't know that guitars made noises like that. It sounds like an alien, you know?
But
funny thing, I love trolling the guys on the Facebook group for the Charvel guitars because they're all into Frankenstein guitars, of course.
Yeah, of course.
So I like to tease and I go, what is the deal with all these busted up like guitars? How come this doesn't happen in the Les Paul group that I'm in? Yeah. How come everybody in the Les Paul group, their guitar has a neck, it's strong, it's got two pickups on it, but there's like a dude here that's got a Charvel neck and is looking for an 83 body. Like, are you guys all pawn shop losers? Like, what's going on here with these guitars and all kinds of disrepair? And they're like, you can't modify a Les Paul, this and that.
You know, I think my favorite part about that story, though, is, which is very on brand, is that, you're trolling a Charvel Facebook group.
If you knew. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. Dude, whichever FBI agent is monitoring you, you know, because they watch all of us, right? I bet everyone at the FBI is like hoping to monitor you on the internet because I just love your trolling, man. It kills me.
Yeah, just occasionally just do insane searches in Google. You know what I mean? Like, what country sells dwarfs or something? And then the FBI guy who's monitoring my thing is like, what's this guy going to do?
Oh, we need to monitor if he makes any phones or any phone calls to Kyrgyzstan or however you say it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyways, crazy. Man, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, just feeling pretty good about the team. Expectations aren't super high.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm fully prepared to get kicked in the nuts against Clemson.
Yeah.
It'll be great if we hang with them for four quarters and pull out a crazy upset win. But nothing changes after that game. Even if Miami gets stomped, the goal of this year was not surpassing Clemson. It was to stop losing to jerk-off teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the next step for Miami is, like you were saying, that, you know, tipped balls and this and that, they're going to get some touchdowns instead of field goals against us. So Miami's going to have to learn to play with some adversity where, you know, last year they folded as soon as they saw adversity, and they're going to have to learn how to win some close games.
Yeah.
You know, everything's been perfect up until this point against, you know, a veteran UAB team and a pretty similar Louisville team in terms of speed and skill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to play, you know, North Carolina and a couple others, Virginia Tech and them. Virginia Tech knows Miami like the back of their hand, and that's a pretty good barometer for Miami. Yeah. Like, if Miami can handle Virginia Tech physically and not choke and everything, you're on your way pretty good. That's a good barometer for us to gauge success on, because, I mean, it was more so under Beamer and that defensive coordinator guy they had. But Virginia Tech, like, showed up. They're going to play four quarters. They're going to hit you in the mouth. And if you don't have, you know, everything tidied up, they'll exploit it.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. And hey, like, if you do that music podcast, I would absolutely love to come on and talk power metal with you or, you know, Van Halen or something like that. I mean, I don't know.
Definitely. I'll set it up. I'm always transitioning away from traditional media into this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, whether you want to talk like, you know, the type of stuff with Cookie Monster, you can do that. Or, you know, I'd love to geek out about that Euro power metal stuff. The guys with the really high voices that sing like they're, you know, they're opera singers, and the drummers are going insane. Love it.
I went, like, I guess it was probably 2 years ago. There's a small venue kind of, you know, mile or two from my house that gets some good bands. And it was like a weird night. And they're like, Europe is playing.
Cool.
And I was like, well, I only know their one song, but it's, you know, like $22. What am I going to do? Sit at home? So I went. Mm-hmm. Not only were they like top 10 tightest bands I've ever seen live.
Really?
I was the only person there that didn't know every word to every song.
Okay.
Like, I kind of, you know, like, hang in the back.
Yeah.
A lot of underage and stuff. And I was just looking around and I'm like, wow, I know that one, you know, cheesy song by Europe, The Countdown.
Yeah.
But everybody else here knows every song. And this band is frigging tight. Like,
that's
they're
cool.
They're really good live. You can tell they performed thousands of times.
Yeah. You know, I had an experience with a band like that. And speaking of power metal, they kind of fit into that genre. Have you ever heard of the band Sabaton? They're from Sweden.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, they do the like the military history type thing. Every song is about war.
Right.
And so I saw them as an opener for, I think it was Nightwish. I can't remember. But anyways, I saw them and exactly how you just described Europe. Like, they were so tight. They were like, I walked away thinking that is one of the best live bands I've ever seen. And dude, their fans were just rabid, you know, yeah. Like flags were coming out. And this is a small venue in Salt Lake City. And, you know, people are like holding up these long, like 6 foot long Sabaton flags. I'm like, yeah. I'd never even heard of this band before today. You know, it's crazy, man. I love music and live music, especially.
Oh, me too. Yeah. This is killing me not being able to go anywhere and see anybody.
I know. This is probably the first year in, man, I don't know how long, that I haven't seen at least 5 or 6 concerts, and I've seen 0. So
at that same venue, I forget who I went to see, but it was somebody kind of heavy. I don't think it was Europe. Okay. But I was still smoking cigarettes at the time, so it was at least like 4 years ago. So I'm out there like in the smoking section, and I noticed there's people there my age and older, all leathered up,
and you
could tell they were foreign. There were some Germans and Swedes and stuff, and I was like, what are you guys doing? Like,
yeah,
you guys aren't from here. Did you come here just to see this band? And they go, no, we're going on the death metal cruise tomorrow.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was like, death metal cruise? Like, I need to hear. What are the names of the bands?
Yeah.
And they started naming them off. I've never heard of any of them, really.
Was it actually called death metal cruise, or was it that, like, 70,000 tons of metal? Was that the cruise?
Yes. Okay. That was it.
Yeah, I've heard about, like, that tour before.
I was like, that, like, I like a little bit of death metal, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A little bit of black metal, Swedish death metal, just a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was like, wow. These guys not only are here at this concert tonight, but they flew from Europe to be able to leave out of Fort Lauderdale on a cruise where they're going to see, you know, all those bands where all their logos look like they were drawn by the same guy.
Yeah, by Michael J. Fox. Is that bad taste? I don't know.
They're like, I don't even know how to describe them, but like super pointy.
Yeah.
And they try to be like ambigram.
Yeah.
So they look the same, you know, forward or backwards.
Yep.
And you see them all when they're on the posters or on the flyers or everything. And you're like, it's like the same Art Institute kid drew every band's logo.
That kid is probably a millionaire. Like, right. All he does is draw death metal band logos. And he's the only guy that does it.
Then another band that I couldn't believe had a huge – I went and saw Maiden last year. One of the last shows I saw live.
Yeah.
And Steve Harris's son.
Uh-huh.
Do you know his band?
I don't.
And it's melodic metal.
I mean, do you know the name of them? Because I don't know it by just Steve Harris's son.
Yeah, let me look up. The Raven Age.
Okay. It doesn't sound familiar.
Just like, it's just weird because I always think, like, how do these bands get together? Were these dudes all in the same town and played in garage, or did, you know, Steve Harris has, you know, a fortune? Did he cultivate this band and they hired dudes, kind of like how Pearl Jam was put together? Or, you know, it's just weird how bands and how fragmented it is. Like, they didn't have one rock and roll act at the MTV Awards.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks ago. Not one.
Yeah. I'm hoping rock makes a comeback, man, but
guitar sales are up.
Really? That's great. Yeah,
for the last 10 years, going back like 5 years. So the last 15 years, like, turntables were outselling guitars. Or, you know, those like DJ setups where you can, you know, mix from your laptop and everything. But now, because of the quarantine and stuff, like, Fender's numbers are up huge.
Cool.
Gibson's numbers are up huge. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. I could use a little more, you know, I could use more guitar music. And I like, I mean, do you know of the rapper Machine Gun Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been putting out like pop punk music recently, and he's actually really good, and I love seeing that. No, I mean, awesome. It's not even that I don't like rap music. It's not really my thing. There's, you know, I have, you know, at least 50 rap tracks on my phone that I listen to regularly. But, you know, for the most part, I'm a rock and metal guy.
Yeah.
So
I shot a Machine Gun Kelly performance for his like DVD accompaniment or something.
Nice. Nice, man.
And it was young crowd.
Yeah. I bet
it was a really young crowd and they got wild.
Yeah. Do you ever go? So have you been to many of those Euro metal concerts? Like, but I'm talking like the ones kind of like Sabaton, where most of the, I mean, I'm going to describe the fan base for you. Almost all of them are like these neckbeard kids.
Right.
I love those concerts because almost just like, I'm a fan of people watching. You see these neckbeard kids, and they're like this is them leaving their shell for the first time because they're so socially awkward.
Right.
You know, like they're, you know, they're the type of kids that don't ask girls on dates and stuff and, you know, don't have confidence to really do a whole lot besides like play video games on the internet. And then they get to the Sabaton concert and they start dancing in all of their awkward glory, you know, and it's usually just like, all the horrible body odor smells are just pouring off of them. And it's just, it's a wonderful experience from a people watching point of view.
I don't know what year this is from, but Sabaton played that little venue by my house.
Oh, cool.
With Hammerfall. So it's either up October 4th. I don't think that's going to happen, but yeah. Must have been last year or the year before.
Yeah, well, if it is coming up, if you ever see them come into that venue, man, I highly, highly recommend checking them out. They're one of those bands where, like, their albums, their music is very okay. Like, I rarely listen to their tracks in my car, but, like, they're a can't-miss live performance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, anyways, man, we're running almost 2 hours, so.
Wow, good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm going to let you go and, you know, let's I might hit you back up so we can touch up that lost interview and I would really like to get that out this week while Marsh is out of town. So
definitely, let's do it.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on, Duck. I always appreciate you. Hey, everyone, make sure you check out Duck's fishing stuff and the Better Duck. What is it? The Better Duck Football Podcast? Is that what it's called?
What do I call it? Better Canes Podcast.
Okay, the Better Canes Podcast. And what's your fishing stuff called?
Just Google Lunker Dog, LUNKERDOG, and it'll come up.
Cool. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you, and best of luck.
Awesome. Fours up.
Yep. Fours up. See you guys.
This has been the Fours Up Podcast.